Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And it's the 10th of December.
Yeah, is there, what is that, the significance to this day? September 10th, is it, what is that? I'm thinking June 10th?
None that I know of. Hmm. You're thinking of the date that will live in infamy, which is the 7th.
Ah, that may be the case. Well, we did miss last week. Apologies to everybody all around due to a glitch in the AT&T internet issue that resolved the next morning, but we weren't planning on staying overnight to deal with it. So we are fixed now. So lots of things to catch up on. We did have
twice as much news.
Yeah. I mean, I did carry over some of the stuff that we talked about. We were going to talk about last week. The show notes from last week are on the site over at dhunplugged.com. But I thought we would hit some of that because there's some of the things that are, I think, kind of important to talk about that we need to kind of flush out.
Okay.
So, well, let's talk a little bit about. Let's see, what do we have to talk about? Some of the things we're going to talk about tonight. December, starting off kind of soft with the markets, and then it got kind of worse. Then it got a little bit better last week. We had a big recovery towards the end of the week as the trade talks are moving one step forward, one step backwards. The Hong Kong protests are not kind of giving up. And now the big news is that the Fed is going to allow for inflation to rise above their 2% target, assuming it could ever get there. And we've talked about this before. You go back years in the markets. What is this 2% level?
Well, that was always considered the ideal level where you could have a slightly controlled inflation and kind of make some money. The government itself can make a certain amount of money without risking screwing up the credit system, because if it goes out of control, then people start paying off loans with cheap money, and the banks don't like that. But the 2% specifically, I don't know where that came from.
It's not only here, it's around the world. I mean, Everybody's adopted this.
Well, both of us should probably look into it and pinpoint. I'm sure we can call up the public relations people for the Fed, and they would give us a pinpoint, a date, and who did it, and why, and what was the rationale, and when did it happen?
Hi, Federal Reserve Customer Service. May I help you?
I go back a long ways, and I don't remember this until recently.
Is that what's going to happen? We're going to have, ring, ring, hello, customer service for the Federal Reserve. May I help you? How does that work?
It works fine.
They have a division of a help desk?
They have a press relations desk. I'm sure they do. And they probably have about 20 people that man it.
Yeah.
And you get on their mailing list. They send you the minutes. So they do whatever you want. And you can ask them questions, and they'll try to get back to you.
Is this something you suppose or you know?
All companies do, and I'm sure. I wouldn't even think twice about it. The State Department has this. The Defense Department has this. They have, I don't know, hundreds of people working these jobs. They're looking for something to do. I can assure you that the Fed has a press office.
Mm. Help desk. All right. Well, we'll
have to. I'd be stunned if they didn't.
I'm going to have to remember to look into that. Maybe some of the listeners out there can try to make a call and see if they can.
Yeah, you got to call as a member of the press. They don't,
I got you. That's a good point.
Some credential.
That's a good point.
I mean, hi. I heard you guys answer questions. You know, it's not going to work.
Use your Twitter credentials.
I'm a Twitter user. I'd like to know this.
I'm a publisher on Twitter. I'd like to ask you a few questions. I also do some Facebook and LinkedIn, by the way, but that's a category of what I do. Anyway, we have a new DH Unplugged web server. It's fully provisioned. I don't know if I told you about this, but just to let you know, I bought a new web server. And we have a new web server up and running. So thank everybody for their help throughout the time that provided us with those donations, which are very important to make sure things are going. We have the state-of-the-art dedicated server for a few different websites, but basically it's running all of the DH Unplugged stuff, which we now have a couple of glitches with, which will be fixed in the next day or so. But everything's running otherwise.
Glitch.
Yeah, a couple of things here and there. This is not coming over. There's a couple of different systems that aren't talking to each other right now. But let's talk about the market update. And I think there's some important things that we have to talk about. And some of these things, interestingly enough, are no different today than they were 1 week ago when we tried to do the show. December 15th tariffs, the hike on the consumer goods and a variety of other products, but I think it's $165 billion of new additional tariffs going on, are going to supposedly go on. President Trump said, you know what? If the deal's not down on paper, if it's not papered, there's a thing he says, it's not papered, we're definitely going to do the increase. And then walked it back a couple of days later as the Dow dropped 350 points on this news. And then on the news also that he'll possibly wait till after the election to really get this going. And then it was walked back and markets came back. And then it was, we're not sure. Today, there was a bunch of things too. I'll give you that that timeline in a moment. Tech stock valuations are now in question, even though they seemingly recovered from a swoon last week. We had the VIX spiking near 15, then 16, then came back a little bit. We didn't report this, and it was during our blackout period, where Black Friday sales, brick and mortar, down 3%, online sales up 19%. Now, this was the prediction that everybody had been looking for 10 years ago, right? That one day we'll see the Black Friday and the retail sales eclipsed by online versus brick and mortar.
Were they eclipsed?
I don't think it was eclipsed, but it's pretty close. But we're still.
I'd like to see the raw numbers.
And who knows if you could trust them anyway? We get this stuff from like Adobe, and I don't. How does Adobe?
These guys are full of crap.
How does Adobe know?
Of course, Adobe's there. These guys, their best interest is in online stuff. They're not going to be selling Adobe Photoshop at Macy's anytime soon.
But how does Adobe? Adobe tracks the online sales. They said there was $9.4 billion. Worth of sales on Black Friday weekend. How do they track all that? Is everybody plugged into an Adobe tracker?
Well, it's that company that they bought some years back that does this. They track everybody.
Every single online sales portal?
Well, I don't know if every single. I'm sure there's a statistician that comes along and normalizes it, makes sense out of less, missing data. But pretty much Adobe, I can't forget the name of this operation already. About 10 years ago is when they got bought by these guys. The next thing you know, they're responsible for setting up shop with the NSA and some big giant computers. Adobe's up to their neck in some of the spying stuff.
Well, it's spying. It's embedded in all the different browsers, I guess, or something.
Yeah, well, it looks. Yeah, when you come up with numbers, here's your online sales. It doesn't look like spying. But, I mean, what other stuff are they grabbing? They're spying. It's a spying operation. I hate to say it.
But sales were pretty good for online. That was pretty good to see. But, again, brick and mortar, retail establishments, traditional retail, down about 3% and not looking really pretty for those organizations. Manufacturing in the U.S. drops again. Now we have 4 months in a row of sub-50 on the contraction level. And as a matter of fact, we backed up towards October levels in the latest report. But miraculously, with some of the recent slowdown in all sorts of economics, magically, we had an absolutely blowout employment report.
How does that work?
Well, there were some people that I mentioned this to, and they said, well, it's Wilbur Ross is in charge. And I'm like, I didn't know he was in charge of that, but maybe he is. And he's just fudging the numbers. I mean,
that could be.
We had the private payroll numbers come in light on Wednesday from ADP, and then they said, we expected 100-something. We got 66,000 ads on the private side. And then Friday's numbers come out at like 266 and expectations for like 179.
Yeah.
And the last 2 months were revised higher also. So we have the House impeachment hearing ending. I don't know how sad you are about that. That was painful to watch. I mean, the Republicans only asked the Republican counsel questions on the last day, and the Democrats only asked the Democratic counsel questions on the last day. No trying to beat the other guy down, just trying to get affirmation of what they believe. That's what it seemed like to me.
Yeah, that's what it was.
It was, right?
Yeah.
What was the point of that?
Oh, they're trying to make points. They're trying to get clips for their campaign. I don't know. You know, it just seems like a very shallow situation here that the Democrats are trying. You know, they're just, I don't know. They don't know what they know that they got a weak slate of candidates. They don't want to admit it, but everyone, Democrat, anyone that really takes stock of things, they can't think that Elizabeth Warren or Joe Biden or any of them are strong candidates. And so they're, you know, they're doing anything they can to weaken the president, derail the president. They, if they could impeach him, I mean, they'll put him up for impeachment, but he's not going to move. There's just the desperation. It's very strange to watch.
Biden lost me on the pool young man leg hair story.
Oh, the leg
what,
hair.
What was that story about? Well, who even talks about that kind of stuff?
I don't know.
That was kind of, that was the height of weirdness.
Yeah, it was very peculiar.
My leg hairs go up and he brushed them down. I mean, I don't even know why. Where what is that? I didn't even understand the context. I didn't get the whole thing. Just to be weird.
Well, part of it is that really long speech he gave to some opening of a community pool or something like that. I'm not even sure what that was.
That was just weird. So here's some timeline on the tariff headlines. These are definitely from all the sources that we get on a daily basis. I have a variety of different, we'll call it operations, that are feeding us data on a daily basis. So we're watching what's happening with on the news front, on corporate front, on earnings, you know, all this stuff is flowing through various sources. All of my sources that I'm watching have said this week is a low commitment and small position trading environment, because you're going to see whipsawing around the markets on every bit of news up until we see the final result of what's going to happen on the December 15th tariffs. That was kind of opening salvo for Monday morning.
Well, that's kind of pathetic when we know it's going to happen. Nothing.
Nothing's going to, they're going to delay it, right?
Don't you think?
I think so.
I mean, let's just go with past performance.
I would think, personally, I think that if I was in the driver's seat right now, I would go ahead with the tariffs from the standpoint of a negotiation tactic and really putting my foot on their throat. However, when I have to blend in the idea of politics that are going on, and the, God forbid, the stock market drops 3 or 4%, then obviously you say, well, they're not going to put it on. But it makes us look really weak, I think. When President Trump has said steadfastly that, you know what, we are going to put these tariffs on. If there's not something signed by this date, you know, it's the red line. We're not going to cross that red line. That's what this is. And we just let them cross.
I don't know, I guess.
It's very weak. So on Tuesday, pre-market, the South China, this today, Morning Post, came out with an announcement. Markets are kind of coming in. I think the Dow was down, going to open up about 150 points lower. The S&P was down about 0.5%. So was the NASDAQ. And the South China Morning Post comes out with a commentary that trade deals are going well, and it looks like we're going to have a delay in the tariffs that will be implemented on December 15th. Well, what happened there? You saw an immediate knee-jerk reaction where markets plowed higher, took away all the red, and started moving into the green. Now, soon after, probably, I would say, just before the open, we saw the U.S. administration say, well, maybe, maybe not. We're not really sure what's going to happen. 11 a.m., Larry Kudlow comes out and he says he can't confirm that December 15th tariffs will be delayed and the implementation of tariffs will still be on the table. Can't confirm anything. So it's these administrations, China's now in the groove. They understand how to toy with markets. And that's all that's going on.
Yeah, China's, they're learning, they're learning something. They're definitely toying with the markets.
Getting back to our original theory that the ability for these kinds of things to move markets so dramatically has to be enriching someone somewhere with knowledge of information.
Yeah, I think I'm agreeing with this. I've seen it. I mean, it's, why not?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I'm going to.
One thing, it's not like, let's say you're some Chinese official.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're or American or any country's official, and you've got an offshore account running out of the Cayman Islands or someplace, Gibraltar, who knows? And maybe it's a trading company that's owned by somebody else, that's owned by somebody else, that's owned by somebody else, but you really own the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you got it buried. It's a buried little trading company. It trades stock. And so you now are part of the inner circle, and you said, let's make this announcement that we're going to declare war on South Korea. And so they make the announcement. You're meanwhile have shorted everything that would have anything to do with this, and everyone gets all bent out of it. And you and then you close your you close out your those trades
mm-hmm.
right after the announcement, and then you go long. And then you come back and say, this was a mistake. We did not mean to say this.
Right. And it's taken out of context.
So now you have made a fortune, a small fortune, surreptitiously, and you have not stolen from the members of the public in your country.
Well, who
which is really
who
the way most people
from?
Do it. I mean, they use these African leaders and all these things. They just rip off their own country. They just steal from the country. This is not stealing from the country. This is pretty, you know, a pretty sane way to do this kind of ripoff. You're just stealing from stupid shareholders.
Aside from the fact that it's probably illegal.
You think?
I mean, you know, I'm just thinking.
Although,
that
would it be illegal in China? Where's it going to be? Where's it going to be illegal?
Well, if that's the problem. If the government does it and the government sanctions it, is it therefore illegal?
And I will mention this, by the way. It's a known fact that in Nigeria, those Nigerian scam letters that are constantly going out and scamming people to the tune of billions of dollars a year is condoned by the government and it is seen as a profit center.
And this is my whole objection to investing in Saudi Aramco. The government-owned company that is selling 1% of their shares in an IPO where the government basically could do whatever they want with the company. They could fleece the company's profits. They could build them up. They could make it and maybe even put in some kind of, well, we'll say questionable accounting that is totally legitimate by their standards at the time that they do it. Thereby, it's not illegal. Thereby, it's not a crime.
Yeah, of course not.
So
there's a lot of non-crimes out there that really people can benefit from if they're crooked.
Yeah.
I mean, it should be a crime, and it's crooked.
Yes.
But it's not legal, illegal. And my scenario with that idea of running a scam like this, which stems from, I'm pretty sure it stems from my thoughts about some Silicon Valley action that I saw back in the 80s and 90s, which just didn't make any sense unless somebody was doing this.
I mean, and there could be a wink and a nod to the whole idea that, listen, if markets go down because there's negative news on this, listen, we're going to quickly walk that back and straighten it out. Because markets react like that. They take this big plow down on this kind of negative news, which is related to the trade war, which has some control by the administrations, whether it's China or United States, versus a move due to, let's say, a bad earnings report by a stock. You're not going to see Kudlow march out and say, you know, I think that Adobe stock that just went down 10%, or, you know, they're earning. No, you're not going to see them say anything about that. But in the big picture, they can move things around pretty well. And they also know that the algos are finely tuned into all the comments, headlines, and the various social media pushes, so therefore it moves it automatically.
Yeah. The algos are their friends.
Somebody's making some profits on this crap is the bottom line. I think we both agree. That's the point.
I would say this obvious, at least to us.
And absurd profits. I'm not talking about just, oh, I bought 100 shares on that dip.
Oh, no. These are like millions, tens of millions of dollars that are whack.
Right.
Yeah.
With no concern about really getting caught in the wrong place for the most part, because you're going to have somebody, whether it's the Fed, whether it's the government, whether it's China, somebody's going to break somewhere and make sure that markets are whole. So Now, speaking of which, you know, talking about the Fed for a second here, this is kind of interesting because this is from last week and I thought we'd carry this over. And the question about what's moving markets. So we know that the talk about tariffs and trade war and whether it's going to happen or not and all that is big. It doesn't seem like the impeachment issue, by the way, is anything at all. Under normal circumstances, you would think that an impeachment hearing would have some kind of sway over markets. Nothing.
Yeah, you would think so. Nothing. But this is having zero effect.
Nothing.
And I believe that even if they run the articles of impeachment out, which I think they may do stupidly, and then send it over to the Senate, I don't think that'll have much of an effect.
I mean, the Senate could sit on it forever if they want, right?
Well, the Senate, well, the real, see, there's a bunch of problems here that should maybe be at least be mentioned. The Senate, you know, if they give it to the Senate could, no, they wouldn't want to sit on it. They'd want to put it into play because then it keeps all the senators there because they all have to listen to all these testimonies. And these senators are supposed to be running for president. So many of them, instead of being out stumping for, you know, in South Carolina, they're stuck at these hearings at the Senate, or they look like douchebags for not being there because this is so important. I mean, the Democrats said so important, but now these Democrats aren't here. So they've got that problem. And the other problem is that it's assumed that the Republicans will drag Adam Schiff and all these different people that ran, you know, Nadler, and make them testify about stuff that they didn't talk about at the, on their, in their hearings. It's a nightmare scenario for the Democrats. They don't know what quite to do about it.
This political teamism where, we all stay in the same side of our team and don't get swayed by facts or non-facts or whatever it is really getting kind of old. I don't recall it being, I mean, there's been times and there's been pockets of this where there's non, you know, this partisanship has been extremely thick like it is today, but it's really gotten out of control. And you got to wonder, why is there so much teeth in either side? Is there, again, is there a financial incentive? I can't really put it together why that you have people that just can't say certain things. You know, if it would seem to me that a Republican would say, you know what, it's just whether it's true or not, whether there is something there, but say something like, you know what, if the facts bear out that this is true, then we will impeach. But they can't even get themselves to say that in a very, you know, just that would seem like a logical thing to say. I mean, they may not think that's going to be the end product. They may believe that, but they don't even want to hear anything. The Democrats don't want to hear anything either. It's like it's crazy. People have gone insane to stay with their party. They really have.
Well, there's some nuttiness out there. There's no doubt about that. You run into it at dinner parties.
Yep. Oh, well, I was out at a group the other day, and somebody started mentioning something. I said, "Oh, I'm backing out of this one," because people they just get crazy. I have friends that just you can't say anything around because they just start throwing out all this, you know. Well, if you say anything about Trump, all they start doing is blasting Obama. I'm like, well, where's the logic there? I don't even understand what does that have to do with anything? Why don't you bring up Roosevelt? Anyway, from last week, I was talking about what's moving the markets. One of the things I did mention again was this whole idea that, you know, impeachment's not, and we talk about that. But what's really interesting is the Fed. And we talked about this, but I quantified this a little bit. And it's interesting because the Fed has gone ahead and tried to right the repo market. This is a situation that happened in September. And in September, what happened was there was a momentary freeze, a liquidity crisis, a crunch where prices of overnight lending went from 1-2% to about 10% in a snap of a finger. And the Fed came in with about $80 billion and said, you know what, we're going to place this in here. We want to make sure the repo market, which is very important for the overnight lending for corporations and for banks, we want to make sure it stays liquid. We don't want any more flare-ups. Well, they did it, what's called an open-ended process that they declared was not quantitative easing. It was not going to do anything but, you know, kind of push this into the repo market. So far, the Fed added, on my first go-around with this, I added up $291 billion since September to their balance sheet. Now, the latest read, which comes out on Wednesdays, they're over $300 billion. And take a look at this chart here.
Wow.
Now, what's interesting about this chart is if you did, in fact, overlay the S&P 500, the Dow, the NASDAQ, the equity markets of the U.S. and pretty much around the world, they would look exactly the same. They wouldn't have that slope down as we've seen here, but from September through where we are today, markets have had a direct move up. And people like have been asking, hey, why is the market moving up so much? I mean, what's going on? How come it can't go down? Because the Fed is pumping in $300 billion, a 9% increase over the base, went from about $3.7 trillion on their balance sheet to over $400 trillion today. So we're back up to that. This, let me come put this a little bit more in perspective. This is averaging $100 billion a month, which is more than we had in the first QE on a monthly basis, even though they stuck in $800 billion to begin with to make sure none of the banks would go under. They were doing $85 billion a month then. QE2, QE3, $50 billion a month. We're at $100 billion a month with stock markets near all-time highs, supposedly the economy doing okay, employment at an all-time low, and the Fed is still pumping money in saying it's not QE. I call bullshit.
You can call whatever you want. If they say it's not QE,
well, what is it?
I think what, you know, I think that what obviously is that it is QE by your definition, and it looks like it by anybody's. What else is it? The question I would ask is, okay, it's not QE. What is it?
It's just a little liquefaction, a little liquefying of the repo markets, where there's still a concern, by the way, that at the end of the year, we may have another major problem.
What major problem are we going to have?
The same problem we had in September, where there was not enough reserves in the system for whatever reason, because of the way that the Fed has structured the new banking regulations and the end of year, end of quarter, end of month, taxes due and lack of liquidity, and the way that companies have been buying treasuries over putting and banks putting money at the Fed. It's just
what about buybacks.
The buybacks.
Or buybacks, I mean.
I mean, that could be, but I think this is more so about the overnight lending when companies need money for funding of short-term, for short-term issues like tax payments that come at the end of the quarter. Could be dividends. It could be, not dividends so much because they pay that out. It could be dividends, I guess. Or treasuries that come due that they have to rebuy for some reason in the banking system. So there's a big concern that's starting to, again, come around and peek its head up. So you can see that probably more news stories and headlines about this towards the end of the year. And we have a Fed rate decision tomorrow, 2 o'clock.
Well, what's your prediction?
I would think from a standpoint of, do we need one? No. Do we need the last three? No. From my prediction of reading the tea leaves of what the Fed said and how they've come to where we are today, is it not going to raise do another rate cut?
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
I mean, they've been talking about this whole thing that there's going to, you know, they did a mid what do they call it, a mid-cycle adjustment. I mean, they wouldn't have had to do any of this if we didn't have the trade war. Let's just get that straight. There would be no reason for this. The tax cuts was just enough. It was fine. But the trade war is slowing things down. They're very concerned. And I think it more so has to do, once again, with the relationship of foreign countries outside of the U.S., foreign banking system, than it does ours, which we are so entangled with. So, moving along. Some good news out of China. We saw the factory activity in China unexpectedly return to growth in November for the first time in 7 months. Mm. So some domestic demand there. The PMI, the Purchasing Managers Index, bounced up to about 50.2 in November. It's highest since March. And that's officially from the China's National Bureau of Statistics. That was so that's an expansion territory from contraction, which was a couple months back. All right, so we missed the employment report. And
yes, that was a big one.
So October was revised from 100 to 156 from 128. September was revised to 193 from 180. So right there, that's what, 40,000 more on the payrolls. November unemployment rate was 3.5. November non-farm payrolls were 266 versus 182 expectations. And that was a higher number The 182 is a higher number to begin with because the expectation was that all the GM workers that were on strike, the 40,000, went back to work. So they pushed those up to begin with, and they still missed it by 80,000.
Yeah, that's a pretty big miss.
Enormous. Meanwhile,
well, it'll probably be readjusted again.
Well, the last two were adjusted up. So you had 40.
Yeah, they were adjusted up. Then I guess it's time to adjust down. If they're going to adjust down, it's got to be with this 266. This number is just completely too high.
The only thing that I could say that may be something in here is that there was excessive hiring for the holiday season. Possibly.
I think every year we go over this and it never,
But that was November. It'd be a little bit early, I would think. Yeah. More so being the December number. But everybody seems to be happy in hiring. Meanwhile, once again, something doesn't smell right because the average hourly earnings month over month were only up 0.2% versus 0.3% consensus. And we did adjust the last one up, but we're still not seeing we're seeing some wage growth, but not a lot. If you're in a full employment situation, you would think that there would be wage inflation.
Yeah, there has to be because there's a, if you're just pretty much scraping the bottom of the barrel to get good people, you have to give anybody you have more money.
The whole dynamic of supply and demand is like out the window. We don't see any.
I don't think it is out the window. I think what we're getting is fake numbers.
That could be the same thing with inflation then. I mean, inflation isn't kicking up.
Inflation is totally
What's amazing about inflation, I get some of the reasons why, but what's amazing about it is you have every single thing that could be potentially being thrown at the idea of a hyperinflation environment, really low interest rates, full employment. Then you have tack on that all these tariffs and there's no inflation. I mean, how is that possible?
It makes no sense.
This doesn't make any sense
at
all.
We should be at 30% inflation.
Right. This does not compute. This is kind of what was his name? The robot from Lost in Space?
Rocky the Robot.
Yeah, this does not compute. Will Robinson, this does not compute. There's a lot of other things, too. I'll give you another one that doesn't compute, okay?
I got to run into that robot once in my life.
Did you? Really?
Yeah.
What'd it look like? Was it just a mess?
It's tall. It's big. It's a big, giant, phony robot. It's just a prop.
Well, obviously. It was from the 1960s or 70s. I love that show.
Yeah. It's a good-looking robot, though.
Did you watch that show?
Yeah, of course. I didn't like the show, but I did watch it.
What was your favorite show from back in that day?
The 60s?
Yeah, like the sitcoms.
Star Trek.
Star Trek. Well, aside from Star Trek. Like a sitcom. Like one of those.
I wasn't, a big TV watcher.
You got Gilligan's Island.
I watched that.
Get Smart.
Get Smart, I liked a lot.
Yeah, Get Smart was great.
That was an era of spy shows. They had a whole bunch of movies. They had Dean Martin playing a spy. They had Armand Flint. They were all comedic spy shows. And there was I Spy with Bill Cosby. There was a slew of these spy shows in the late mid-60s or mid-70s. And it was all to get people in the country used to the fact that we're in a security state.
Oh.
With spies everywhere.
Oh.
We're just brainwashing us.
Well, what about the Andy Griffith, not the Andy Griffith show, what about the Matlock and Ironside? We had a whole bunch of lawyer shows.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah, well, the Ironside's extent was pretty much a, let's use the Perry Mason guy for, put him in a wheelchair so it doesn't add a little phony dimension to it.
That was a little weird, the wheelchair.
If you read some of the biographies of the guy who played Perry Mason, whose name is eluding me, apparently he was such a weird character that he kind of wanted the wheelchair so he wouldn't have to walk around at all during the show because it was too much work.
Raymond Burr.
Raymond Burr, yeah. He just said, how about to put in the guy in a wheelchair and then you can move me around.
Yeah, I want somebody on staff at all times to push me around when I need it.
We were at, I was in Korea at some event, and there was this guy, this famous Japanese, he's kind of a comedian inventor, and he invented all these weird things to win the Ig Nobel Prize. I think he's won a couple of them. And so he comes in, they roll him in, professor, doctor, something, they roll him in a wheelchair. And then he gets up out of the wheelchair, and then he proceeds to give his lecture, which includes a dance act.
Was this Akira Horuchi?
something like that. Very famous guy. And so he gets back in the wheelchair, and then these two nurses roll him out. And a friend of mine stops and says, "Hey, you were up there dancing. Why are you in the wheelchair?" And the guy says, "Because I like it." There was no physical reason for this.
Yeah. I guess
it's like to be pushed around. And I think Raymond Burr was in that same category during that show.
That's weird. Well, getting back to the finance side of things and the area of confusing and counterintuitive entirely, here's something that makes you say, like, what is this about? U.S. equity stock funds. Now, we've been talking about this a little bit throughout the year, but this is the culmination of that total discussion. U.S. equity stock funds saw $300 million in outflows in the week ending Wednesday. That was last week. The fourth straight week of outflows for such funds. We're looking at things like all the stock funds, that mutual funds that are out there. U.S. taxable bond funds took in about $5.9 billion, the 16th week of inflows. Okay, so that. Then we also saw the $135 billion net into ETFs, equity ETFs. So what you have to do is you take the 135, you subtract it from the 390. Bottom line is that this year, we've seen, actually, the total number when you do all the months throughout this year, investors pulled out about $130 billion from equity funds and from ETFs in the equity area this year to date, which is, by the way, the largest withdrawals on record since the data gathering began from Lipper back to 1992. Now, with that in mind, here's what doesn't make sense. How is the market at all-time highs if we don't have investors putting money into the market? They're taking money out of the market. I'll wait.
You can wait forever. I have no idea. It doesn't make any sense at all.
The only thing is that we do know. It's stock buybacks, and I think it's also sovereign wealth funds that are utilizing outside channels to put money into equities, for example. And of course, it's the simple and futures that are being used also to prop up markets. But it is pretty bizarre if you kind of think about it. Now, if you're a bull and you use the word constructive, we're constructive. That's the word for being bullish. You don't want to say I'm bullish. You say I'm constructive, meaning you're adding to positions. You use this as kind of a contrary indicator. You say, well, all this money's on the sideline and people
I understand that. The money's all on the side waiting to get in. It's going to fly, skyrocket, you name it.
Right, because this is a sign that investors are very wary. But again, investors are very wary at the top of a market, and that's, you know, and you're looking at that
as normal.
Something is just not right again with the supply-demand curve of what's happening in any of this finance.
It's a house of cards.
It is a little strange.
House of cards. Mm.
So we have
when will it collapse? I mean, I've been looking at a lot of different charts, and I could make the argument that we're at the end of the depression and all these numbers are going to triple.
It would take us getting back to me, at least, if we would see another catalyst. What would the catalyst be to really get markets moving again? Not moving again, but really moving to the next level. It would have to be earnings picking up substantially. And what would do that? It would have to be, I think, us going a step back and going into reversing our anti-globalization process. The reason why we grew so much so beautifully over the last 30 or so years is because we globalized. If you didn't have Pepsi-Cola selling soft drinks and snack goods throughout the world, it wouldn't be worth what it's worth today. You need the rest of the world to provide the extra earnings. You can't just do it in the United States only. That's why you see why, you know, Tesla. Oh, everybody's excited. They're building a factory in Germany, and they're opening up and selling cars in China, and Ford's over here and over there. It's a big world out there, and it creates a lot of revenue. And we're kind of going backwards. We're coordinating ourselves off. And that's just not what we need to do. So I think the only thing is that if we do, in fact, go back to globalization as a footprint of or the blueprint, really, of what we're doing, I think that would do it. Other than that, I don't see how earnings are going to keep on going higher. It's like what happened with I bring this up all the time. It's like what happened to Dell. We all knew that in order for Dell to keep on expanding at the same rate they were, everybody would have to have about 10 PCs on their desk in about 5 years. That wasn't probable. And that was the beginning of the end of Dell. Remember how that stock cratered?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it just was a buying opportunity for Michael to buy the company out.
Right. Worked out well for him. A couple other things here.
Yeah, smart.
We have a new phrase out there. We have two new phrases. One keyed off the other. We have the Peloton husband, which talk about some twisted people. That commercial, you've seen it, right? The Peloton commercial?
Yeah.
Did you think that this poor wife was a prisoner?
No.
Did you think that she was abused by her husband who bought her they bought themselves a Peloton, and then she was like, oh, okay, I want to go, but she was upset about, did you think there was something peculiar at all about that?
No.
But somehow, once again, it becomes a situation where the male is a bad person and abusing the wife, and the poor thing who was skinny, I did notice that, she was skinny to begin with, is now being put to the bicycle for a year and thanking her husband for all the torture that she had to deal with to get her body in shape for him.
Stockholm syndrome.
Oh, terrible. But the thing, the best thing of this was the Ryan Reynolds commercial. You saw that one?
For the booze.
Yeah, for the gin. Where this is the follow-up, which supposedly intimates that the Peloton wife has divorced the Peloton husband. And now is sitting just shocked with like a deer in the headlights again.
With a couple of her friends drinking booze. Boozing it up.
Now, I'd like to see the other side. The other side is the Peloton husband drinking
that
a beer going,
coming.
Yeah, Peloton husband saying, oh, thank God. Got rid of her. All she wanted to do was exercise all the time. She didn't want to give me any attention. Oh, all right. Moving along to some other strange oddities here. Toilets are now in the crosshairs. The president on Friday said he ordered a federal review of water efficiency standards and bathroom fixtures and complained that people are flushing toilets 10 times, 15 times, as opposed to once in homes with low flow appliances. He said other bathroom fixtures have slowed water to a trickle. He said you can't wash your hands practically. There's so little water that comes out of the faucet. And the end result is that you leave the faucet on. It takes you much longer to wash your hands. You end up using the same amount of water. So he wants us, now the government, to look into toilets and bathroom fixtures as...
Was he reading newspapers from like the mid-80s or the late 70s? I mean, I do remember that era. I guess we went into the 90s. Because there was a whole episode of Seinfeld about this with the low flow shower head. And that was recommended, I know, in California. Oh, you got to put a brick in your toilet. You got to get a low flow shower head.
Oh, I remember the brick. This. Yeah.
And it's like, what?
I don't know. The EPA is saying that a family can save about $380 in water costs per year, saving more than 17 gallons per day by using appliances currently certified to WaterSense standards. It seems to me that he went to the bathroom, to be honest with you. He probably flushed. It didn't go down. He probably clogged it up with some kind of too much of toilet paper or something like that.
And he got mad. I think after eating cheeseburgers from McDonald's,
And he got embarrassed and he said, you know what? We got to look into this. Somebody get on this right now. It's not my fault because, you know, he blames everybody else. So
it could have been of overflow.
It could have been. He's also complained recently about light bulb energy efficiency requirements imposed under President Obama, and the administration announced earlier this fall it would roll back the rules.
Yeah.
So
the rules aren't needed anymore.
Well, one of the things that he's really troubled
You could roll back, you sound like you're rolling back rules, but these rules, now that the LEDs have come into prominence,
right,
there's no reason for any of these rules.
Well, his concern is that the the light bulbs with the energy efficiency seem to make him appear orange, and he's very concerned about that. Seriously. He complained the new energy efficient bulbs make him appear orange.
Well, I mean, there's two kinds. I mean, it's all the Kelvin of the bulb. It's not the energy efficiency. It's the Kelvin.
Yeah.
Somebody needs to give him a class in this. So what he needs, I think his problem is that they're probably using really low Kelvin, which is what I prefer in the house, like 32 to maybe the highest you want is about 35 to 4,000. Maybe you can live with 4,000.
4,000 is pretty white.
It's pretty white, but it's not 5,200.
Right.
Which, you jerk it up to something up in that range. 5,200 is orange anymore.
5,200 is 6,000 maybe. Whatever the highest number is, that's what they put on Anderson Cooper on CNN. Right?
It'll wash you right out.
You don't even see, like, does he have a nose? I don't think he has a nose.
You know, the funny thing is, not to keep telling these tales, but I had all these different Kelvins. I went to the NAB show and I talked to some guys about these, and they told me specifically that the TV guys are all buying the high numbers, the 52s, the 55s, for their television sets, for the set, set where the Anderson's sitting. So he is getting washed out. He says it's the movie guys who buy the low Kelvin.
I mean, in the studio here, I have my front lights are at 4,000. And my back lights is like, I think it's 3,700 with a couple of knockdowns on the brightness, you know, you know, just for a backlight. Anyway, we got to talk about rape sharing, which is the new way of describing ride sharing, it seems, because Uber said on Thursday it received more than 3,000 reports of sexual assault, including rape related to its trips to the United States in 2018, when they had about 1.3 billion rides. Uber said the 2018 figures represented a 16% drop. Hooray! Ha ha! Hallelujah! In the rate of incidents from the previous year in the five most serious categories of sexual assault reported.
Apparently it's both drivers and passengers.
Passengers are raping the drivers? Or the passengers are raping passengers?
That does happen, apparently, to a higher degree that they don't report much of it because, you know, but there's, a lot of that.
So you call a car, somehow, what do? Drag out the driver and rape them against the car or something?
Oh, you're in the back seat. There's a woman driver, let's say.
Uh-huh.
This was you with female driver, and you put a gun to her head.
Ah. And say, come into the back seat.
They don't pat you down before you get in.
Right. Well, now Uber's also thinking about offering courier services for retail businesses. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm thinking, I have a confidential document that I need to get across town. And I'm going to call an Uber driver for it.
Yeah, it seems unlikely.
I mean, what kind of...
Well, after all the tales of all these drivers eating food.
Yeah, oh yeah. They eat your food out of your delivery.
Yeah, you order some Chinese food, the next thing you know, the guy's stuffed by the time he delivers it to you.
Quickly, the Illinois pension is having continually having an underfunded pension problem. They're going to increase their unfunded liability from up $3.8 billion to $138 billion at the end of 2019. They just can't get their act together.
Well, this state has got one of the worst credit ratings. This state is broke.
They're totally broke. $137 billion.
They're going to do this? How is this helping?
Well, it's not helping, but they have no choice. The point is they keep on paying out people. They don't have the money. They keep on borrowing it. Schmucks give them the money to do it. Terrible.
I hate to say it, but you can't do this forever. You have to pull the plug, and these people that are getting these pensions are going to find themselves penniless.
Yep. Once again, I want to mention thank you, everybody, so much for all your great donations. They went to help us get the new server set up, plus the new T-shirts, plus the winning trophy for the end of year, which we're going to talk about in a second, close to the Pin Cup. So thank you very much. If you do want to help out, you want to get in the holiday spirit, it's time. Go over to dhunplugged.com, click on the little yellow button that says donate, and send in whatever you can, whether it's a monthly recurring donation or one time. A lot of people did help out the last few weeks. And again, that was very much appreciated. It's holiday time. It's the time where you say thank you to the people that you love. And I know we love you. So maybe you can love us too. And our way of giving back is through the show every single week, minus last week's. So here we go with that.
Yeah. It's rare that we miss a show.
Yep.
I think we'd miss about three a year, maybe.
Let's see. I think we're going to miss the one during Christmas week, Christmas Eve.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'll be on a cruise.
Oh, Christmas Eve. Yeah, we don't want it. But no one's going to be, yeah, it's probably not a bad idea.
So we have a couple of things to announce. First of all, we have a winner of the Close to the Pin Cup warm-up, which was the Dow Jones Industrial Average ETF. And it was a person who won two times in a row.
That's
pretty good.
We just had to hire him.
So,
I didn't come in.
We didn't put it. Neither of us did for the final. And now, so Steve B won, and he was very close to the price. The last price was
Steve Ballmer.
Yeah. Yes. Again. Once again, Steve Ballmer. Thank you. We have the other one coming up. Don't bother if you're not on the list. If you haven't won this year, it's only for the winners of all the Close to the Pin this year. There's about, I guess, about 10 because we had a couple, I think one double and somebody else. But we had about 10 different contestants, those people who won during the year. We sent you an email. Another reminder email will be going out in the next couple of days, so definitely check that out. I also want to take the time to mention, by the way, it's a good time to mention this. If you haven't had the opportunity to, and if you haven't done this, you really need to do this. Thursdays and Sundays is No Agenda with Adam Curry and with John C. Dvorak. And they do a show called No Agenda. And if you haven't heard of it, I don't know what rock you're living under, but basically it's a deconstruction of the news in excellent 3 hours of your time that will not only educate you, inform you, but also make you laugh a whole lot. So definitely check out No Agenda, live and streaming 12 o'clock on Thursdays and Sundays. And of course you can find it over at iTunes and all that good stuff. By the way, a little something I'm telling you. So I roped Adam into something. So there's this 80s cruise, right? You know, which I never thought I would go to one of these because, you know, my dad went to this. I'm like, are you going on a 50s cruise? Oh my God, that's so, oh, what are you going to listen to? You know, Bowser and Sha-na-na and all this. So I saw this 80s cruise. I'm like, wow, I'd like to go on that. The headliners are great, all these people. And then I look down, I'm like, oh, look at all these MTV hosts that are there. Kind of interesting. So I talked to Adam about it. He goes, nah. So he said, you know what, though? You get me, you know, let's get some whatever. So I wrote to the cruise company as his agent.
Yeah, well, you are his agent.
Right, wrote as his agent. And I said, listen, if you want Adam Curry of MTV fame to...
By the way, make sure you get your 10% out of him.
He also already offered that to me.
Yeah, well, it's actually 15% in today's world, but okay.
Go on. So I wrote to them, and right now it's in the pending status for the 2021 cruise.
So who's listed for this cruise so far?
I don't know. I haven't seen that yet. Next
year's cruise.
Yeah, next year's cruise. This year is like B-52s and, you know, all the bands. You know, New Order, I think, is coming and a whole bunch of there's a long list of bands.
So where does this cruise go and how long does it take?
I think it's about 5 days and it's probably around the Bahamas.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
It'll be a hoot. And especially, you know, it'd be great. So, you know, if he goes, it's good for me because I get to probably meet all the bands.
And you want to meet the bands because?
I don't know. Kind of, you know, one of those things to do in life, you know?
I've been backstage with these bands. You have nothing in common with any of them. There's nothing to talk about.
Yeah, maybe I'll manage their money.
Oh, that's always a good idea. Yeah. You might sell one of them on money management. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. You might find one of them that's... Yep. Although I would think that any of those guys that are on those cruises don't really have the kind of portfolio that...
Probably not.
That you'd hope for.
Then again, you know, they could be rich and just looking for that kind of last shot of people saying that they love them.
Yeah, it could be. There is that element that does go into play.
Anyway, if that happens, it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to push for this. I'm going to kind of really work this pretty good. I also mentioned that this week coming up on the Disciplined Investor Podcast, last minute tax tips with a CPA. We're going to talk about what to do for 2019 to make sure to save your taxes and what to do for 2020 to make sure you're squared away. That's the Disciplined Investor Podcast, found everywhere. Okay. Did you see this? Did I miss anything here? No. Okay. Did you see this, the crack Santa sweater?
Yes, I saw it, and I wished I'd seen it I don't shop at Walmart, but I wish I had seen it. Because I would have bought it.
Did you notice at first there was a problem, or did it take you No, I didn't notice this either. I mean, do you think this was
purposeful? It just looked like a crappy sweater, and then when somebody points out what's going on, you oh my God, oh, yeah, he's got the straw, he's got the lines of Coke. it's unbelievable.
It's Walmart saying that it's very sorry. for making available a Christmas sweater with apparent drug reference. It features a picture of Santa Claus behind a table with three white lines that look similar to cocaine and straw, and he's got like a stack of balls of probably like, what do they call, 8 balls of cocaine?
I don't know what those balls are.
Or maybe it's crack or something, who knows? But anyway, there's a picture on it on the episode number 484 on dhunplugged.com. We have to say goodbye to Paul Volcker, very famous Fed officer who fought inflation like nobody else, very tall guy. Very imposing character, died at age 92 this week.
Yeah.
And let's see. Lastly, Amazon.com and said President Trump is exerting improper pressure on the Pentagon to keep lucrative cloud computing deal from going to its perceived enemy. I don't know. Is Microsoft his perceived enemy? Oh, his perceived enemy, Jeff Bezos. Oh, yeah. No, no. Back it up. President Trump doesn't want the deal to go to his perceived energy, enemy, Jeff Bezos, who is the owner of the Washington Post.
Yeah.
So Amazon also, by the way, is moving some of its headquarter operations to New York without any public monies. 335 square feet of office space.
335,000.
What did I say? 335? Yes, 335. Yeah. That would be a small office. 335. 335,000 square feet of office space for approximately 1,500 employees.
Yeah, it's just a... sales office, remote sales office.
Let's see. We're running out of time, but we have to have the answer to last week's brain, 2 weeks ago, brain teaser. This was an A- that you gave it. It was pretty long. I don't think I can necessarily explain the answer, although I could go through this. You want to read it?
This is Susan has invited a family to Thanksgiving dinner as her plates are not the best. Susan decides to buy new plates, one for each person at the Thanksgiving dinner. There'd be a grandfather, a grandmother, two fathers, two mothers, four children, three grandchildren, one brother, two sisters, two sons, two daughters, and a father-in-law, one mother-in-law, and a daughter-in-law. At least how many plates does Susan need to buy?
So the answer is 7.
I would have said the answer is 1.
1? Why?
You can all eat up, you know, share.
Ah. But what you do is you take out, like, there's a grandmother, but that could be a mother also. It could be a child.
No, I understand how it works, yeah.
Yeah, so a little complicated, but the answer is 7. This week—
you have to write them all down. That's too complicated. Too complicated.
Too much, too complicated.
Too much work.
Yeah. So this week's is, I don't think, as hard, and it could be, let me read it, and you can figure it out. And you tell us what your score is. Here we go. You leave home and you go to the right. You reach a corner and you turn left. You reach another corner and you turn left again. You reach another corner and yet again you turn left and go home. When you get there, there's a person with a mask there waiting for you. What's happening?
Well, I mean, if it's not a burglar, that might be a good one. I'll give that one an A.
An A.
Yeah.
Ooh, wow. That's good. This one you can figure out. Once you know the answer, you'll be like, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's one of those.
Yep. This is a game that we play. It's not a solicitation to buy or sell any security. It's not a recommendation of any kind. Nothing on the show should be considered investment advice or a recommendation. If you choose to invest in any of the stocks mentioned, you should know that it may carry risk, along with the risk of a loss of principal. You should also seek out professional financial advice for your particular situation. We assume no risk as these are not to be considered recommendations. Horowitz Company, myself, or John C. Dvorak may invest in any of the securities mentioned and will disclose that on the website under the weekly stock picks section. You can go to dhunplugged.com and see all the names we discuss in the segment along with the performance information from the date discussed as well as any additional important disclosures. So we were away last week, so we didn't have anything to really talk about.
I had a good penny stock too that I could have thrown in, but I love
it. Is it still live? Maybe it'll still be good.
Yeah.
Well, we still have a lot of the same things here.
You had to get in and out.
Take it.
Okay. Well, we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 stocks left, all green except yours.
So let me just rephrase that. There's 7 stocks. 1 is mine. I'm the only loser on the whole list.
Yeah. All mine are up. And by coincidence, the one that's down is the only short.
Yeah.
So short's still really not a way to
go. Still very difficult.
Yeah.
But interestingly enough, The Facebook, you know, short here, which we shorted at the date of entry, was $189.56.
Yeah.
It really hasn't seen a significant amount of, it's up 6%, don't get me wrong, but, you know, it just can't really move. It hasn't really moved. Broken to a new high. There's still a lot of overhead on this. So it's still there. We'll see what happens.
All right. So you got anything new? You do. You have a new stock on here. I have two.
So I have, I really don't know how to say
this. I don't
even
know how you pronounce this.
It's Pinduoduo. Pinduoduo?
Pinduoduo.
Pinduoduo. It's basically a Chinese company that competes with like Alibaba. It's like a mini Amazon. It's an online retail establishment in China. Stock looks, there's a gap right above the area we're in right now. And it looks like it could see some upside.
Okay, you got a gap hole.
Yeah, gap hole.
All right, I have a couple stocks. I have from two different reasons. I've got, I wrote them down too and I can't find them. I have KOD.
KOD.
It's a biotech company. And the reason I put it on the list, one reason, one of my favorite reasons.
Insiders.
Insiders, Baker Brothers.
Oh, the Baker Brothers are back.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just did something wrong here. Let me
KOD.
Let me copy this. Control C, Control V. There we go. Oh, yeah, it's Kodiak Sciences. Yeah, yeah. I got it.
This is so that could be a winner.
Four.
Now, the other one is Descending Triangle. So I'm kind of hedging my bets here with these techniques because there's not much to it. AMSC.
AMSC. That's another one of those.
It's a superconductor company.
American superconductor.
Yeah.
So this one is Descending Testicles.
Descending Triangle. And I should mention how I'm doing, what my mechanism is for Descending Triangle. The stock has to be, the long-term look of the chart has got a big high on the left and it's going down and it's down at the bottom of the triangle and is bumping up and down and bumping up and down. There are other descending triangles which show up where the stock is up or it's making a loop or it's going up or the numbers on the left are low. And it goes up, and then it goes into descending triangle mode in some other fashion. These are all look like this is all bottom feeding kind of a style of picking, and it seems to work. It works most of the time.
All right, we got that. So Kodiak Sciences was down 9% today. Are you so that's Baker Brothers? Is there? What is it? Kodiak? Oh, it's $61 stock. Okay, and then American Superconductor, it's at under 10. Are you taking a still 10%?
I'm going to stick with the 10%.
10%, okay.
It should bounce up. And
all right, very good.
We'll see.
All right. All right, well, I think we're going to end it right there, and okay. we'll be around next week.
All right, see you then on Tuesday.
Great.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.